So firstly, I'd just like to say it's really wonderful to be back here at Bhaktivedanta Manor after, I think, about 7 or 8 years. Been quite a while since I've been here. And before that, I used to come almost several times a year, but now things change in life, so it's been a while since I've come here. And it's nice to see so many wonderful improvements, especially, you know, I was commenting earlier, the grounds, they look so beautiful now. They're just, you know, every time I come here, they're nicer and nicer. And of course, in the deity worship, I see lots of very nice improvements. Cleanliness is much better, so I'm really happy to see that. The pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are unlimited. How can a small living entity elaborate about those transcendental pastimes? If Sheshanaga, Ananta, personally were to make the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya into sutras, even with his thousands of mouths, there is no possibility that he could find their limit. And this is quite an extraordinary statement, because if we go back into the fifth chapter of the Adi Leela, it describes there the glories of Ananta. And as we know, Ananta means unlimited. And Ananta is unlimited. There's nothing he can't do. And through Ananta is an expansion of Balaram. You know, I mean, there's a bit of a mechanism to it, but essentially he's an expansion of Balaram. And Balaram's role is, he's a servant to Godhead. So his function is to serve Krishna. And in every pastime that Krishna appears in, then Ananta appears there in the form of all the paraphernalia. For instance, it describes in the fifth chapter of the Adi Leela how Ananta or Balaram expands as Krishna's asan, as his Brahman thread, as the umbrella over his head, as his shoes. And actually, we understand in deity worship that everything, all the paraphernalia that's used to serve the deity, is actually an expansion of Ananta. And so, therefore, not only do the devotees respect the deity, but they also respect everything that's used to worship the deity. So even though it may have, like, you know, like somewhat mundane nature before we connect it with Krishna, as soon as something becomes connected with Krishna, it becomes fully transcendental. And this is because of the potency of Balaram or Ananta. So here it's stating that even if he was to take all the pastimes and make them into sutra forms, a sutra means, like, you know, in a few short words you describe a whole concept. So even if the pastimes, these extraordinary pastimes of the Lord, were described as sutras, then Ananta would not be able to reach the end of those pastimes. So it just tells us how amazing are the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or, you know, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, because they're just unlimited, they're unfathomable. We cannot actually understand the depth of those pastimes, because, you know, there's obviously what you see. And just like we read here in the Chaitanya Charita, a few chapters prior to this, it talks about the reasons for the advent of Mahaprabhu, but it talks about the three external reasons and also the three internal reasons. Most people just are actually seeing the external reason. They don't actually understand the deeper meaning. And of course, as we see, Mahaprabhu himself, he describes one of the verses from the Bhagavatam, the Atmarama verses, as it's called, Atmaramas Chamunayo. And he gives many descriptions of that verse. And he gives 64 descriptions. And then he says, but actually these are only the prominent descriptions. And the nature of spiritual life, the nature of spiritual understanding, is unlimited. And anyone who's doing service in the temple, for instance, will know that there's no end to the service. It just keeps coming. And that's the nature of spiritual life, is it's unlimited. And the more we immerse ourselves in the process of Krishna consciousness, the more unlimited our satisfaction becomes, because we're connecting with the unlimited. And so we see here that Ananta, he'll never reach the end. Even if describing for eternity, he'll never reach the end of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And also we understand that there's different descriptions of Ananta, of his form. Sometimes he's described as having 5 hoods, sometimes, you know, 9 hoods, different things like that. But also, quite common description, he has unlimited hoods. Sometimes it says 1,000, but, you know, it also says unlimited, because he's unlimited. And there's also, there's different manifestations of Ananta, because there's a statement in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which I never really understood. It talks about how Ananta is actually a jiva, raise your eyebrows. Huh? It says he's a jiva there, but actually it says he's a Shaktivesh incarnation of the Lord. So I'd asked many devotees what was their understanding of this, and I never really was satisfied with the understanding, because mostly we know that it's describing Ananta as being an expansion of Balaram. But in this one description, it describes how Ananta is a Shaktivesh avatar. So I thought, well, I'm confused by that. So I asked a few devotees. Finally, I asked Banaswami. Banaswami is just, you know, an ocean of information, and especially from the writings of the Goswamis. So then he quoted Jiva Goswami. I can't remember which book, but he quoted Jiva Goswami, and he explained that according to Jiva Goswami, when Ananta takes on this role of serving Krishna, like chanting his glories or expanding as all the different paraphernalia, that's Balaram. But when Ananta has the role of supporting the universes on his hood, that's a jiva. This is according to Jiva Goswami. So we see that, the universes, they sit on top of Ananta's head, just like a mustard seed. You know, if you put a mustard seed on your head, you wouldn't feel it. You wouldn't even notice it. So he's got these massive universes on his hood, and he doesn't even notice them. They're so small. So it gives you, because our tendency is to think that everything we're doing is so big, so important, so wonderful, the center of the universe. That's the tendency of the jiva, is to think that they're the center of everything. But and that's why the Vedic information is very important for us, because when we start to understand the structure of the universe and the concept of everything and how small these things are in comparison to the creations or the expansions of the Lord, like in the universe is all sitting on Ananta's head just like a little mustard seed. He doesn't even feel it. This universe is 4 billion miles across. That's just, and like how much weight there is in that 4 billion miles with all the planets and the sun and the stars and all those type of things. It's incredible. Just this one planet, how much does this one planet weigh? I mean, I remember reading it years ago, and it was a really big number. I just couldn't kind of conceive of it. But, and this is one of the, this particular universe we're living in is one of the smallest universes. Because remember that pastime when Brahma was knocking at Krishna's door. He wanted to visit Krishna. And then Krishna, the gatekeeper went to see Krishna and said, "Oh, Brahma's at the door, he wants to see you." And Krishna sends back the response, "Which Brahma?" And Brahma was like, "What? What do you mean, which Brahma?" He said, "I'm Brahma, four-headed, And so he took the answer, went back to Krishna, "Oh, it's the four-headed Brahma." So he said, "Okay, tell him to come." In the meantime, Krishna called all the Lord Brahmas from everywhere. And then they couldn't see each other. But the four-headed Brahma from this universe could see all the other Lord Brahmas. And some of them had, 10 heads, 20 heads, 50 heads, 100 heads, 1,000 heads, millions of heads. So you can actually understand, he got this vision of actually how insignificant he was, because he was actually one of the smallest Brahmas. And this is why it's very important for us to read these types of pastimes and other pastimes of Krishna, because to understand actually, even though we're unique, we're individuals, we're all servants of Krishna, we're actually insignificant. And this is the prayers of Lord Chaitanya. He says, I'm not any of these, I'm not a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, I'm not any of these, I'm just a servant of a servant of a servant. And we see that Mahabhu, he takes this position because he understands the position of servant is the greatest. But, also understand, it can be a little bit, creates some dilemma for us sometimes, because the position of servant is greatest, but we need to understand that I'm not the greatest, I'm the smallest. I'm insignificant, I'm just a speck of dust at the lotus feet of Krishna. So when we hear, these descriptions of how the pastimes of the Lord are just so unlimited, so amazing, you can't even describe them, we think, I've read that book, I know everything about that. It's quite common, I've read that, I've heard that. Like sometimes you try to explain Bhagavad Gita to someone, for instance, especially certain members of the congregation. Oh, yes, I know Bhagavad Gita. I mean, I can't remember how many times I've read the Bhagavad Gita, but every time I read it, I find something, I didn't realize that was there, I didn't understand that. Or, you hear, learned devotees giving class on Bhagavad Gita and hear, like Burujan Prabhu, and hear his realizations on the Bhagavad Gita. It's just astounding. There's just no end to the knowledge. And that's the nature of spiritual life. That's why, it's not like Ananta's limited. He's unlimited. But the reality is there is no end to spiritual knowledge. There's no end to spiritual life. It's just an undumbuddhi. It's this ever-increasing ocean. That's the nature of spiritual life. It's ever increasing. So therefore, Ananta will never come to the end of Krishna's glories or Lord Chaitanya's glories because they're never ending. The glories just keep going on and on and on. And it's not that the incarnation of the Lord or the manifestation of the Lord lives for a set period of time in a set place and that's it, never happens again. No, because the pastimes are just going on and on. If they're not in this universe, it's in another universe. And Prabhupada describes how it's just like, you know, the waves in a river or the waves in the sea. They just keep coming. They never stop. They just keep coming and coming and coming and coming. There's no end to it. So Krishna's pastimes are like that. And sometimes, you know, like he has the Leela avatars and sometimes the same incarnations will come in again and again and again. But they're never the same. You know, we hear descriptions from various Puranas about when the Lord manifested as Lord Buddha. And Srila Prabhupada described that sometimes when Lord Buddha comes, because Kali Yuga is so progressive, or so, not progressive, but regressive, actually, is coming backwards, but Kali Yuga is so advanced that the place has become so degraded, when Lord Buddha comes, he comes as a spaceman in a spaceship. You know, so the pastimes are just, they're constantly varying. Never does he do two things the same. It's just like when Radharani cooks for Krishna. She's cooking unlimited preparations and never makes two things the same. That's spiritual life. But in the material world, things after a while, they become sort of somewhat dry and dull. Because why? It's just the same thing again and again. There's very little variation here. You know, you go by, just like, I had an experience, just to give a mundane experience, you know. Before I left Australia, my phone was kind of dying, so I went and bought a new phone. And, you know, you're playing with the phone. Oh, this is great, you know. It's like the battery lasts so long. It's, you know, three, four days in the battery. Now it's, you know, I've only had it a month and a half, and now already the battery's back down to, like, you know, I'm lucky if I can get a day out of it. You know, so it seems different. But that's the nature of the material world. It seems new. It seems fresh. But in no time at all, oh, it's the same thing. You lose your interest in these things very, very quickly. But in spiritual life, it's ever fresh. It's the ever-increasing ocean of bliss. It's always constantly new and changing. And it's like when you take, you know, I mean, how many times have we taken darshan of Radha Gokula Nanda? But every time we come and take darshan, it's new and fresh. You know, I was just pointing out to Murli, the little, I don't know if anyone noticed, the little buffalo horn that Gokula Nanda's got on his waist. Really beautiful buffalo horn with the painting on it and stuff like that. Very, very attractive. And you know, it's always new and always fresh. So I've got a few verses to get through, and I'm not sure. I'm supposed to be teaching in a little over an hour, so I'm not sure how long I'll be able to go for. Devotees like Sarup Damodar and Murari Gupta have recorded all the principal pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in the form of notes after deliberate consideration. The notes kept by Sri Sarup Damodar and Murari Gupta are the basis of this book. Following these notes, I write of all the pastimes of the Lord. The notes have been described elaborately by Vrindavan Das Thakur. Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur, the authorized writer of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is as good as Srila Vyasadeva. He has described the pastimes in such a way as to make them sweeter and sweeter. And it's very interesting, you know, like Krishnadas Kaviraj, he's addressed as Kaviraj. He's like the king of all poets. And Kavi means a poet. And we find in the Vedic texts that things are presented in a very poetic manner. And we see here the way he's describing how, you know, Vrindavan Das Thakur, when he's presenting the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're sweeter and sweeter, you know. And we see the same with it says in the, I think it's the third verse of the Bhagavatam, and it describes how Sukadeva Goswami, how he's describing the pastimes of Krishna. And because Sukha is parrot, and actually Sukadeva is the parrot of Radharani. And a parrot has an interesting feature, is it's described that if a parrot bites a fruit, that the fruit actually becomes sweeter from the touch. And we see, it's describing how Sukadeva Goswami, he's taken these pastimes of Krishna, and he's digested them, and he's chewed them a little bit. It's just like sometimes you see, like, you know, the mother bird, she'll take take the whatever it is she's going to feed the baby, and she'll chew it up. You know, the parrot will chew up the fruit or seeds or things. Like, you don't see so many parrots here, but in Australia, there's just like there's millions and millions of parrots. And where we live, it's sort of subtropical area, and lots of parrots, lots of butterflies, lots of fruit trees, all that sort of stuff. And so the parrots, they always come, especially when the mangoes are out, and they taste the mangoes, and then they'll chew them up, so they're a little bit soft, and then they'll feed that sort of slightly chewed fruit to the babies, so the baby can digest it. So this is what Sukadeva Goswami's done. This is described in the Bhagavatam. He's taken that fruit, which was already relishable for all, but he's chewed it and made it semi-soft and very digestible. He presents it in a way so it's very, very digestible, very, very tasty. So in the same way, we see here that Krishnas Kaviraj is describing how Vrindavan Das Thakur is presenting the pastimes in a way that they're sweeter and sweeter, making it even more relishable. And in this age, because of it describes in the Bhagavatam how in this age people are, you know, quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, you know, less intelligent, all these wonderful qualities we have in Kali Yuga. So the thing is that people are not very much attracted to hearing about philosophy, not very much attracted to spiritual topics. So the business of the Acharya is to present things in a way that makes it more palatable, more digestible, to entice people to take to Krishna consciousness. And that's what we see if we go back through this chapter, especially there's a few verses preceding here, how it starts to describe the Adi Leela pastimes of the Lord. Because this chapter essentially is the prelude to the rest of the first I think 12 chapters is primarily describing 14 verses that Krishnas Kaviraj spoke at the beginning. And then he goes about explaining them. And he explains them throughout the beginning section. But now we see this is the beginning of the descriptions of the pastimes. And he talks about how in the Adi Leela, the Madhya Leela, and the Anti Leela, how the Lord performs different pastimes. But we see that all throughout these different leelas, one thing that is prominent is the propagation of the holy name. How Mahaprabhu is even as a baby, it describes how he starts crying. And then the ladies of the village, they come, they start chanting, Hari, 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 Hari. And as soon as he starts to chant, they start to chant the names of the Lord, he stops crying. And then so they stop chanting, so he starts crying again. And then they have to chant, Hari, Hari, Hari. And so they actually started to address him as one of his names became Gaura Hari, because he's golden complexion, and he was always getting them to chant the names of Hari. So you see, even as a baby, he was propagating the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, because they try other things to get him to stop chanting. They try to, rock him backwards and forwards and feed him things, but he kept crying. But then as soon as they started chanting the names of Hari, he'd stop crying and become peaceful. And then as he grew older, then, as a youth, he was, encouraging people in Navadvipa. He'd go around the town and encourage them to chant the names of the Lord. And then when he opened up a school, he started to explain the vyakarana, the grammar, through the names of Krishna, and he would get the students chanting the names of Krishna. So we see always that he's just drawing people into this process of Krishna consciousness, nurturing the development of Krishna consciousness through the chanting of Hare Krishna. And we see in devotional life that every facet of devotional life is simply about reawakening this love of Krishna. So whatever it is we're doing, we just do that in a way. We were reading about this yesterday in the introduction to the Nectar Devotion. It talks about there's this Anya Bilasya Shunyam Gana Kamna Ritam verse. And the Acharyas describe that as what they call the Paribhasa Sutra of the Nectar Devotion, or meaning this is like the seed verse. It's the verse which is explaining the whole theme of the book. And it's described by the Acharyas that this verse is actually talking about two qualities or symptoms of bhakti. It talks about the Sarup Lakshana and the Tatasta. Thank you, Tatasta Lakshana. I just go blank sometimes. I even forget what I'm talking about. So it talks about how the Sarup Lakshana. There's three qualities of the Sarup Lakshana. So it's for Krishna. There's an active engagement, and there's favorable intention. So So this is the Swarup Lakshana. So we see like here that even though, you know, it's talking about how he's engaging them in these pastimes or he's engaging them in chanting, now they may not be, you know, necessarily have any intention of serving Krishna. You know, they have this favorable. They're chanting them favorably. They have a, you know, good intention. It's focused on Krishna. There's an interesting verse in later on in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Madhya Lila. I think it's probably about chapter maybe 20 or 22. I don't remember. And Mahaprabhu is talking about the 64 activities of devotional service. And then he sums it up, and he says that, what was it? Sadhu Sangha Nama Kirtan Bhagavat Shavan Matura Vasa Sri Matari Shariya Shavan. That associating with devotees, chanting the holy name of the Lord, studying the Bhagavatam, living in the Dhamma, and worshipping the deity with faith and veneration, these are the five most potent forms of devotional service. But then he says, the next verse he says is really interesting. He says, even without faith, if one is a little bit connected with any of these five items, he will achieve, you know, his love of Godhead can be awoken, and he will achieve pure love of Godhead. So even if the person has no faith, if they're somewhat connected, so we see that Mahaprabhu, through his pastimes, he's connecting people with devotional service. He's connecting people with the chanting of Hare Krishna. So they're doing something for Krishna, even though they may not actually understand what's going on. They're chanting Krishna's names. They have this connection. They're engaging in activity, and they're not envious. Therefore, it's going to awaken their love of Godhead. And we see in all the activities that we do in devotional service, by becoming connected with Krishna with favorable intention, we're doing some activity for Krishna with favorable intention, then it helps to gradually awaken love of Godhead. We become purified. And, you know, whether we're doing deity worship, whether we're cooking, whether we're, you know, doing sankirtan, we're doing book distribution, you know, chanting the holy names of the street, whatever it is we're doing, because it's for Krishna, there's an activity there for Krishna, and it's got a favorable intention, this is eventually is going to purify us, because this is, you know, one of the primary characteristics of bhakti. Being afraid of his books becoming too voluminous, he left some places without vivid descriptions. I shall try to fill those places as far as possible. The transcendental pastimes of Lord Chaitanya have actually been relished by Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur. I am simply trying to chew the remnants of food left by him. My dear devotees of Lord Chaitanya, let me now write a synopsis of the Adi Lila. I write of these pastimes in brief because it is not possible to describe them in full. To fulfill a particular desire within his mind, Lord Krishna, Rajendra Kumar, decided to descend to this planet after mature contemplation. It's kind of interesting because here he's saying, you know, after Krishna had mature contemplation, and then previously he's talking about how Srup Damodara Murari Gupta wrote the notes after also, you know, proper deliberation. So here we can understand that intelligent persons, that they think carefully about what it is they're going to. They don't just sort of do things in the mode of passion or act impulsively, because actually, as we understand, Krishna describes in the Gita that passion ultimately results in distress. We do things in the mode of passion and we'll suffer. So the process of devotional service is geared towards elevating us through the modes of nature. And at least, you know, we should try to come to the mode of passion, because as Prabhupada, the mode of ignorance, because as Prabhupada describes, the mode, what am I saying? Mode of goodness is what I meant to say, sorry. See, influenced by the mode of ignorance here. Because the mode of goodness functions as a springboard to the transcendental stage. So just like, you know, anyone who's gone swimming or gone to the swimming pool, you know, they have these springboards where you can sort of bounce up and down, and you know, then you can dive from the springboard. And just through the agency of bouncing on the board, you can actually bounce quite high. And so in this way, becoming freed from the different modes of nature, especially passion and ignorance, we're actually able to, one of the symptoms of goodness is illumination. So it means through illumination we can actually see things as they are. Whereas in passion and ignorance, if we're acting in passion and ignorance, we actually can't understand the reality of what's happening in this world. We may have our impressions, but it's just like looking through coloured glasses. I remember when I was a child, there was this song by a well-known performer in Australia. It was called Rose Coloured Glasses. And so he's talking about how wonderful the world looked through rose-coloured glasses. But actually, it wasn't the reality. It was just a filter on his vision. So in the same way, if we're looking at life through the influence of passion and ignorance, then it gives us a filter, and everything we see is filtered through that lens, and we're not actually seeing how things are. So, people who are influenced by passion and ignorance, they think the world is such a wonderful place. They think, oh, it's very beautiful, it's this, it's that, I'm enjoying so much. But they don't actually see because of the ignorance. I'll give you an example from when I was a child. I was in an automobile accident. Actually, I was living in Malaysia, and my brother and I were riding down the highway. And I was pretty stupid as a kid. Whatever my brother did, I just did it, And so he turned his bike, but he looked first. I didn't look. He turned his bike and went across the highway. I turned my bike following him. Car came and just knocked me off the bike. But the interesting thing is, I didn't feel anything. There's no pain. I just woke up in the hospital, the next thing I remember, and this guy was just picking bits of gravel out of me. That's the next thing I remember. So, the modes of nature become covered by ignorance, and just, you just black out, you go into this unconscious state, and you don't feel anything. That's the modes of nature. And similar with passion, et cetera. So, when people are covered by the modes of nature, they don't actually perceive the reality of what's going on. But one who's situated in transcendence, or at least in goodness, they're more aware of the reality of what's going on in this world. So they consider things very carefully. Lord Krishna, therefore, first allowed his family of superiors to descend to the earth. I shall try to describe them in brief, because it is not possible to describe them fully. Lord Sri Krishna, before appearing as Lord Chaitanya, requested these devotees to precede him. Sri Sachidevi, Jagannath Mishra, Madhavendra Puri, Keshava Bharati, Ishra Puri, Advaita Acharya, Srivas Pandit, Acharya Ratna, Vidhi Nidhi, and Thakur Haridas. And so we got today's verse then. Just chant the verse, just go through it. There was also Sri Upendra Mishra, a resident of the district of Srihatta. He was a great devotee of Lord Vishnu, a learned scholar, a rich man, and a reservoir of all good qualities. And Srila Prabhupada's purport. Upendra Mishra is described in the Gaura Ganadesh Dipika 35 as the Gopala named Parjanya. So Parjanya is the father of Nanda Maharaj, isn't he? I think he's the father of Nanda Maharaj. That same personality, who was formerly the grandfather of Lord Krishna, as it says here, appeared as Upendra Mishra in Srihatta and begot seven sons. He was a resident of Dhaka Dakshinagram in the district of Srihatta. There are still many residents of that part of the country who introduce themselves as belonging to the Mishra family of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we see here also, as this description unfolds, we'll see that there's a lot of similarities between the pastimes of Krishna and the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see also that the people who assumed certain roles in Krishna's pastimes, they had similar roles in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Because, as we know, with the example of, say, for instance, with the father and mother of Krishna, they perform many, many lifetimes of austerities in order to be benedicted with that service. And they eternally appear and serve Krishna in that way. And many of the residents of Gokul also, they have these eternal services for Krishna. That whatever Krishna appears, they descend and they take on the same services. But it may be, as I was saying before, it's not just going to be the same every time. It's not the past times, one time is like this, the next time is exactly the same. There's unlimited variety. And when we read about these different descriptions of Krishna, and even there's an interesting statement in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it talks about how there's unlimited jivas, and all the jivas are individual and unique. And just as all the jivas are individual and unique, also Krishna has an individual and unique quality to reciprocate individually with that jiva, and he reciprocates with no two people the same. So by reading these different types of descriptions, it helps us to understand more and more about the nature of Krishna. He's unlimited. You know, and it's very difficult for us to comprehend these things, because whenever we try to understand the spirit, I was having this discussion the other day with someone. We were talking about, I was talking to a friend of mine in Australia, Madhu Mangal. You know Madhu, right? Anthony? He got initiated recently. You know Anthony Brennan? Oh. Yeah, he got initiated. He's Madhu Mangal now. Anyhow, so he'd been reading this book, and this book was talking about, how people learn history and stuff like that. And like, obviously these days we have books, but previously there was no books. And this lady had gone and done all these interviews and stuff, and she was trying to understand a bit about how the Aboriginals in Australia remember things. Because, you know, especially with the elders, their knowledge is vast. They understand every single animal in Australia, how they function, how they mate, how they live, their migration patterns, you know, when they eat this, when they do this, everything. They understand every single tree, what qualities it has, how it grows, what seasons suit it. They understand all about the seasons. So they're generally migratory. They'll live in one area and then they'll move to another area just depending on the seasons. So they understand, you know, vast amounts of knowledge, like encyclopedias full of knowledge, and it's just all up here. And so she was looking at that, and so they have this thing called, they talk about the dream time, and there's all these different stories they talk about, woven into the stories, like the stories that, you know, they seem, from what I can observe, to be somewhat fictitious, but into the story is woven all these facts about the animals, about the landscape, about the trees, about this, you know, because their life was very much dependent upon that. So we see that they've put this overlay of their conditioning onto the environment. So in spiritual life, we also tend to do that, because for us to conceive the greatness of God based on our finite ability to understand things, it's not possible. As long as we take it from that perspective, as long as we take it from the mundane perspective, we're always going to put this overlay of my conditioning. So just like Prabhupada talks about, you know, Dr. Frog, you know, who tries to understand the Pacific Ocean from his well. You know, and he's sitting there and he's saying, "This is as big as my well." And he's saying, "No, it's not so much bigger than this, you know, and it's bigger than, you know," and he keeps puffing up his bag, you know, to try and understand, and finally he explodes because he just, you know, he says, "It's as big as this, as big as this," and he keeps puffing it up and up, and he says, "No, it's so much bigger than that," you know, and he explodes himself. So the point is we cannot understand, as it says, you know, Atasya Krishnanamadi Navavidgraham Indre Seva Mukhiji Roswaya Mevas Bratiraha. No one can understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Lord through materially conditioned senses. It's only when the senses become purified through the process of hearing and chanting that we can actually understand the transcendental nature. So as long as we have these conditionings, you know, the pastimes of Krishna are just going to sound like they're just too far out. You know, how can you? And that's why most people think it's fictitious. They think it's mythology, is because they're trying to understand it from the perspective of a conditioned living entity. But if we take and that's why only a devotee can actually understand and accept Krishna's pastimes. Because they have taken the process of devotional service and removed the conditionings. And it's only in the liberated state we can truly accept the greatness of Krishna and just how unlimited Krishna is. And that's one of the things that is being mentioned here, you know, earlier on and also here, about how is it possible to understand, to describe the pastimes of Krishna, because they're unlimited, because Krishna is unlimited and everything about his creation is unlimited. Okay, so I'll finish it up there. Is there any questions at all?